Welcome, everybody. Thanks for braving the crowds to make it here. We're going to talk about social media for authors and creators. And first, I want to start off by letting the panel introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Tara Burton. I'm a professor of marketing at Kennesaw State University. I teach social media. I write about social media. I do it way too much. And I have a book called The Author's Guide to Social Media, and I have a podcast called The Geeky Side.
I'm Troy Faison, and I create graphic novels. I have six of these published, mostly sci-fi or fantasy type, and published through Kindle Publishing, available on Amazon. And I'm very happy to be here. Thank you.
Want to introduce yourself while Jim gets on the...
Come on. Not really.
Okay, Jim, you're up.
All right, great.
Oh, yeah.
I was doing the big sprint from the Westin.
Oh, that sucks.
I'll give you 10 seconds to catch your breath.
Hi, I'm John Hartness, and I am the founder and publisher of Falstaff Books. We're a small press based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. I also write four different urban fantasy, southern gothic, and comedic horror series of novels, and I am the HMFIC of the Saga Genre Fiction Writers Conference, taking place in Charlotte in March. And I'm also a cast member of the Authors and Dragons podcast. And if you would like to know more about any of this, you can scan the QR codes on these bookmarks.
Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, I'm Jim Nettles. I'm a business and technology consultant. I'm both a fiction and nonfiction author. My latest is actually on the business side of being an author. Part of what we do is media management, other stuff for authors. And so when I catch my breath in a minute, then I'll go back to running my mouth.
Okay. Hi, I'm Gail C. Martin. I write multiple series of epic fantasy, urban fantasy, steampunk, and horror. As Morgan Bryce, I write urban fantasy, male-male, paranormal romance. But on the other side of my life, I have an MBA in marketing and management information systems, and I've written six books on social media marketing for Career Press and other publishers, most recent of which is Social Media, the Essential Social Media Marketing Handbook. So let's talk a little bit about why authors need to be on social media. You know, authors are famous for being introverts. Why do authors need to be on social media? And I'll start down at the other end of the table.
Hi, because everybody is. I mean, one of the reasons you need to be on social media is to try to connect with people and start engagement. If you're going to go traditionally published, that first time that you start submitting your books, if they get interested in you, they're going to ask you what's your social media profile and how many people do you have following you. If you're indie, it's your lifeblood, connecting with people through social media. So I think regardless of which path you're taking, they both are important. I don't know. James got it now, so he can...
Oh, okay. Well, thanks. As I project and the mic comes back on. One of the biggest things for as an author or as a creator of any kind is we do business with people we like, we know, we trust, or at least we feel some connection to. And even if it's somebody you've never met in person, you can build some degree of rapport or at least some understanding of who is that person. Is this somebody whose stuff I want to follow or not? So I really think it's about the ability to create somewhat of at least of a personal connection and reach out to people in a way that wasn't available even 10 years ago.
I definitely agree with that. That's a good politician response. I agree with these two people.
Laugh. Agreeing with me will get you in trouble.
Okay. Well, seriously, it's a great time because technology never in human history has been so changed and transformed for people to connect. I mean, from the first fire made, what would people do? They would sit around, they would talk, they would communicate. Technology allows people to communicate anywhere in the world, which could be your product. And that's something really awesome because that's the machine that you have to use in today's world. So very important.
We do have seats open in the back.
Anybody's
looking for seats?
$20 and you can have this one.
True entrepreneurial spirit.
Small business owner.
And he'll sign anything you have.
Jim's chest will attest to that. without social media, I am severely limited in the number of people I can offend at one time. With social media, my reach is almost limitless.
We're talking about the benefits here, not...
Depends on your brand, babe.
Yeah, true.
Look, Chuck Wendig got a whole lot of book contracts by saying the F word on a blog for many years. Social media allows you to amplify your voice and reach your and put forth your character and your persona to a larger audience. A lot of people are going to say that you need to be genuine on social media. Eh, let's go for consistent on social media, because if you're genuinely a horrible person, maybe don't let that out. So I am not, when I am at home with my cat, nearly as rude and snarky as I am when I'm trying to get through the habit trails. But social media allows me to take my personality, turn the knob up to 11, rip it off, and broadcast that widely so that I can, again, offend as many people as possible with 160 characters.
Social media also allows us to remain in contact with our tribe, our customers, our fans. And that's important because there's a lot of noise out there, and people have a lot of other things battling for the front row of their brain. And if you aren't maintaining that top of mind awareness, it's very easy, no matter how much they love you, they love your book, they love what you create, for you to slip out of memory, especially if there's a time lag between one product and another, like in a book launch. If there's 6 months, if there's a year between books, that's forever. They're on to something else, no matter how much they were hoping they could get the next book. They've forgotten about you. With social media, you have the chance to actually remain in consistent contact with them. And it's become an expectation. In the not too distant past, we didn't have the expectation of a personal relationship with the authors whose books we liked or with the people who created any of the things we enjoyed. Now that is part of the package. That's one of the ramifications. So you are absent at your own peril, because people have decided that they want that sense of personal relationship or that illusion of personal relationship.
That ties very well to something that I talk to new and newly published writers about literally all the time. It's the idea of the writer or the artist or the auteur as this grand solitary figure is an idea rooted in the past and rooted in poverty. I write saleable genre fiction. My job is to sell books. The idea of living a J.D. Salinger-esque life doesn't work in today's world. J.D. Salinger is dead, as is that business model. So if you want to be a hermit and have no one and have no engagement with anyone, then I suggest that you also make enough money writing to hire someone to pretend to be you, and hire someone who's witty and personable.
And I think that is something to keep in mind as we talk about all the things we're going to talk about this hour, is what is your expectation from your writing or your creation? Are you trying to make a living from this? Or is this a hobby? Or is this something that is a side gig to your day job, and maybe someday you'll try to grow it into a full-time job, but right now it's a hobby that gives you some extra money to go out and buy drinks? That's going to really make a difference in how you hear and respond to what we say, because if this is all about being able to pay your rent next month and put food on the table, that's a different level of commitment and intensity than if you're really just kind of doing this for fun and, hey, it would be nice to sell a few. So use that as a filter as you're hearing this. You don't have to get overwhelmed by thinking that you have to do everything we talk about here, but the more of the more dependent you are on the income from what you create, maybe the more you need to think about doing more rather than less in terms of what we talk about.
It's also important to keep in mind that your goals and your metrics are your goals and your metrics. Jim, are you a professional writer?
Most days.
Do you make a living off of your writing?
No.
Both of those statements are true. Jim is absolutely a professional writer. Jim's goals for writing are different than mine because, one, he writes fewer dick jokes, and two, he's not dependent on writing to pay his mortgage and his living expenses. Jim Gale and I have a mutual friend who is a physician. He literally saves lives by going to his day job. I have published 4 of his novels and will be publishing a 5th late this year. He's not allowed to quit his day job because people depend on him for their physical and mental well-being. You are still a professional if you do not make a living at your craft of writing. I was a professional lighting designer and director for over 20 years in theater, and I had a day job for every one of them, but it didn't make me any less of a professional than the person down the block from me who didn't have a day job. Our circumstances were just different. So in addition to determining what your goals are, don't measure your success by someone else's metrics. That's really important, and it's really, really hard to do. We all want to look for something to be our yardstick, for something to be, well, I haven't made the New York Times bestseller list, so apparently I'm not a successful writer. Yeah, you can be a successful writer and never ever make the New York Times bestseller list. So, I'll step down off my soapbox for a minute.
No, I think those are some very important things to say up front, just for kind of a level set, so that we're all hearing this with some similar filters. So let me toss this out to the panel. There's an overwhelming number of possible social media platforms you can be on. I don't think any human being can be on all of them effectively simultaneously. So how should people who are authors and creators winnow that down to the ones that are going to be best for them? How do they know which ones to pick? Because everybody has a limited amount of time, especially if you're going to use some of that time to actually write or create. And I'll start down at that end again.
So to me, there's two things you should always keep in mind. I keep knocking that thing off. Is that what are you comfortable with and who's your target market? So if your target market is younger, there's platforms that appeal to a younger demographic. If you have a more general audience, there's platforms called Facebook that appeal to a more general audience. If you're witty and can throw out 280 characters worth of snark and are great at that, then Twitter should be part of where you're at. But always consider those two things. What can you do comfortably? And where is your target market, your primary target market? Because if you don't connect with them, then who are you going to sell to? So to me, I always look at those two things to try to make a decision. So for me, I spend a lot of time on Facebook and Instagram. That's where my market is, and that's where I'm comfortable.
And I'm going to actually build on that a little bit, because one of the questions is, what ways are you best comfortable communicating and what works best for your audience? I mean, most of the social media platforms now reward you for video. They reward you for imagery. It's not just necessarily putting in something in chat. So if you don't necessarily want to write something, but you're out doing something fun, you're out doing something, you know, you're out researching something, you're out somewhere, taking and documenting that trip can be a real easy and good way of connecting with people. Pictures of the dog, or, you know, a quick video of the dog playing in the yard, you know, or you playing with the dog and interacting with it, gives people that personal touch. So it's a matter of finding what platforms you're comfortable with, and I do encourage you find the one that you're comfortable on first, and then working on demographics second.
I would definitely say Instagram, for me, works a lot better than Facebook. To me, when you put a product out there, and this is just my experience, Facebook, it just seems some of the people are just a lot more meaner and more negative. I mean, you post something, you know, a story that you love, and you have like 1,000 people trash it. But I can go to Instagram, and my experience has been people are not quite so quick to try to bite your head off. And I've been using Instagram a lot to get that exposure and get the product out there. And I would say Instagram is definitely a good way to go. It's different than Facebook. You can do both. But I've had more luck with Instagram. I have noticed book sales will change. Even as you get up to like 1,000 people, even once you get that many people following you, which doesn't seem like a lot, but that can make a big difference on exposure of your product. So I would definitely seriously consider those two avenues. But for me, Instagram has been better. So
you still have to make your art. So it's very easy to get caught up in, oh my God, I have to do 6 social media platforms and 2 hours a day on all of them, and I have a day job that I work 8 hours a day at, and then I want to play Diablo 3 for four hours a day, and oh, by the way, I need to poop at least once. And you're out of time, by the way. I'm bad at math, but I know that I have now run over the amount that lets me sleep and eat. So do the social media that you can do that works with your style, your brand, your product, that doesn't get in the way of you making your art. And it's also frequently possible to get on social media and get so spun up by some of the shit posting and the trolling and the trash talking and all of this that it wrecks your emotional balance and your ability to create. If that happens to you on a platform, get off that platform. I don't like Twitter. I do some Twitter, but I typically consider it a wretched hive of scum and villainy. So I don't spend much time on Twitter. I pop in once a week for maybe an hour, mostly to see what a couple of professional wrestlers that I follow are saying, and a few writers that I only really communicate with on Twitter. But it's not my thing. I've never been someone who takes many photos. So Instagram, while whenever I've done it, I've had good engagement, and it has typically been more positive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm not a picture-taking person, so that platform is not great for me. I sit on my butt in front of a computer all the time and pontificate, so Facebook works pretty well for me. That's kind of my brand. Yes, mm-hmm. I do. I run Facebook ads for multiple series, and I just got the bill yesterday. My spend on Facebook is fairly limited monthly. Last month, I spent about $650 Facebook.
Can we hold questions till the end? I promise we'll have a time for questions, but please don't call out during the panel piece. We'll get to the questions at the end. What I would say also is, don't pick a platform that you absolutely hate doing. If you hate being in front of a video camera, don't try to be a YouTube star. It's not going to work for you. And not only that, not only will it not work for you, not gather your audience, but you're going to keep putting it off and putting it off and putting it off. And one of the key elements to being successful with any of these platforms is consistency. It's an ongoing conversation. So I always tell people, pick two that you're really comfortable with and that you've done the research to know match the demographics of the people who are buying your stuff. And then build those out, and then think about adding more if you really feel the need, if you really want to. But if you start conversations and then don't show up for 3 months, you've lost that connection. That connection is no longer warm. That's not a relationship. You just ghosted on all those people. So you want to be out there, and it may not be the same amount of time every day. You may not always have great pictures to share every day, but you want to be out there consistently so that they know you still have that connection. So do what you're comfortable with, that you feel good at. It's very easy to research the demographics of these sites to know where your audience is and go there. And then be consistent, because that really is going to make more of a difference than how perfectly posed your photographs are or whether or not you are the next video sensation. It's that you're there and you've made that connection.
I think that you hit on something really important there, and that's it's easy to research the demographics and find out where your audience is. Mm-hmm. It's also equally important to research your sales. Once you have product out there and are selling product, it's important to know where your audience, what your audience is versus what you think you want your audience to be. If you think you've written a YA book and you are marketing it to teenagers, and then you find that 65% of your sales are to women between 40 and 60, then you're above the average split for adult YA readers, and your marketing mm-hmm. then should shift, and maybe your platforms should also mm-hmm. shift to follow where your audience really is, because they may not be... You may not actually have the audience you thought you were going to have.
And that's something also to keep in mind when you're taking advice from books or podcasts or other things. They may sing the praises of a particular platform because it works great for them. You have to take that and look at your own reality, and what works great for them may not be the right place for you, no matter how amazing it is for somebody else.
And just because it works today does not mean it will work tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And demographics change, the AIs change, what people see and how they show change. So when you figure out what your metrics are and how they work, you then need to keep following them, because they will change over time and you're going to have to change your approach.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the key things here. I hate to break it to you, but this is not a once and done kind of thing. It is a constant evolution. Because the sites change, the features change, the algorithms change, the rules change. And not only does it affect what your ads do, let's look at the great Tumblr debacle of last year, where Tumblr is now a ghost town because the site decided it wanted to do something different, and an awful lot of users left. Well, good luck. I hear real estate's cheap out there now. Because nobody's in town.
And cost per click is really cheap.
Yeah. We talked about that last night and had fun.
Yeah. So and you've got to watch it all the time. Yes, you do.
You change as an author. I'm going to take a wild guess that Gail Martin 6 years ago marketed on different social media platforms than Morgan Bryce 6 weeks ago.
Yes, or that Morgan Bryce will be marketing on in the next couple of months.
Because those target markets are a wee bit different.
Just a bit. Just a bit. You guys want to jump in on that?
Well, you know, yeah. I'll go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Also, you know, don't forget about, you know, advertising on Amazon. I mean, that can be another area that can be a really way to go. Let's say you have your book finished. And you can make the greatest book in the world, but as a lot of us know, if nobody knows that it exists, nobody knows. So you can do advertisement on Amazon, and it kind of works where it's simple. You go to where you can do the advertisement, and let's say, you know, you want to do a couple of days, and you say, okay, I'm going to invest $100, and when someone goes in there, they're going to click, you know, to see your commercial. That's about 40 cents a click, and that's going to come out of your 100. And then you have a time of how long that's going to run. The good thing is, you know, when the time runs out, if you've only had a few people click on it, you don't lose that $100. You get to keep that $100. The way you lose money is if they click on it and no one buys it, then eventually you'll lose that $100. You know, but if you market it right, you know, you can put in $100 and maybe make, you know, $200 or $300 or $400 profit just off of $100. And I think Amazon is a good way to go, but there's so many good ways to go. But that's just one thing to consider.
Well, and we talked about some the other day, is that one of the things you really want to encourage people to do is ultimately get down to the real estate you own,
yes.
Your mailing list, your website, because you invest a lot of time and energy in social media to engage with people. But much like with the Tumblr debacle and other things, you're playing by other people's rules on their real estate, and they can change the rules anytime. If you really want to be able to communicate with people and communicate with your message without other people's limitations, within reason, there are laws, depending on where you're at. But, you know, much like with Morgan Bryce, you can't have two topless men on a cover and do a Facebook ad.
Facebook has got, well, Facebook's being extremely homophobic in its application of its community standards. And the a romance cover that will get away without any comment from the Facebook gods, if it's a het couple, all of a sudden gets flagged if it's two guys. Yeah. So you got to play around that. And like with Tumblr, there were an awful lot of artists who were getting commissions and doing business with customers to order photography, to order art from their Tumblr accounts. And when Tumblr said, hey, we're going to Disney-fy, all those people had to go somewhere else, and they didn't have those other sites already set up. So you're losing business every day. You aren't doing business on the site where your customers knew how to find you. So that's also something to keep in mind, is that it never hurts to have a plan B. And like Jim said, to be constantly making sure people can also be in touch with you through your newsletter, through your website, so that if, you know, your site goes away tomorrow, gets sold, the rules change, they are still in touch with you and they don't have to find you again.
Yeah, if you have 5,000 Facebook friends and 10,000 Twitter followers and both of those sites shut down tomorrow and you've got 12 people on your email list, then you have 12 people.
And you have to have, the first thing you should do before you invest in social media is invest in a website. Figure that landscape out, figure out what domain you're buying and get that set up, because that is what you own on the web. That's what James is talking about. That's the only place where you make the rules. Every other place you're playing in somebody else's sandbox and they're gonna make the rules. So own your web and design what you want your brand personality to look like, and have that be as consistent as possible from platform to platform, so that when maybe things shift off of Facebook and now you don't have the organic news feed that you used to have, but you're over on Instagram or Twitter, they know when they find you because your brand is consistent between them and how it looks, and they know how to find your website. If you can do those things to begin with and get a grasp on what you want your brand to be and your web address, then that's a great start to build upon.
Okay, last question for the panel, and then we'll open it up to audience questions. What do you think some of the biggest mistakes are that people make on social media that we haven't already mentioned? Dawn?
Bullshit. People can smell it a mile away. No, I don't think you need to be necessarily yourself and completely open and talk and tell every detail about your life and your spouse and your children and... Okay, yes, you need to show every picture of your cat you possibly can. Because the internet is for cats.
And that's why John's behind on some deliveries, is the cat sitting on his keyboard.
This is not incorrect. But if you are disingenuous, the people that actually care about something will sniff you out like a rabid dog. Gail, over the last 2 years, has developed a presence in supernatural fandom because she found this show and loves it. If she were trying to develop the same presence in, I don't know, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia fandom, it would come off as disingenuous because somehow she thinks Jared Padalecki is cuter than Danny DeVito. And while we know this is empirically incorrect, the people that you are trying to reach who love the things that you are trying to sell need to see you at least be genuine and sincere in the things you say. I am very open and very political on my social media, and I am not ever disingenuous about that, and I feel like it gains me more fans and sales than it costs me. And it also cuts down on the number of one-star reviews I get, because the people that are going to hate the politics in my book are going to see my politics everywhere else and not read my stuff, so I'm safe.
I would say also to be very patient with a platform that you use. Mm-hmm. You know, so many times we get on there, we finish a book, and we're excited, and we love it. And then sometimes we just expect everybody else to feel the same way. And it is like taking a child and throwing them out to the world. So when you create, you know, you decide what platform you want that works for you, just be patient with it and give it time to grow. And while that's happening, you know, immediately start on your next book. You know, so just, you know, use some patience, what I would say.
So I'm going to throw an exercise at everybody that's in this room. And then we'll talk about the mistake that goes with it. Take out the little funny device. Take a picture of the stage. I want you to then tag whatever platform it is you love to do, EFF Forums, thanking them for putting on this panel, because all of you are obviously here for a reason. Then I want you to tag all of your panelists that are up here. And then I want you to tag Social Media for Creators and Authors and whatever other hashtags.
And then rate us in the app.
And rate us in the app.
Please rate us in the
app. Because the mistake that most people will make is not taking opportunities to engage, and you wait too long to get started. And by doing something like that where you're engaging and you're saying, I'm a creator, and I'm on social media, and I'm doing things to build my career, I'm doing things to learn and educate myself, is going to be the thing that puts you ahead of other people. That also tells you some of the people you can follow to learn more.
So I already did that assignment. I tagged Troy in a post already. So one thing I will say, if you're running more than one social media account, make sure you're on the right social media account when you post. I have posted about romance novels on my Gamer Girl one. It was exciting. Luckily, there's some cross-hatching there, but I always make sure if you're managing multiple platforms and multiple handles that you're on the right one at the right time. And then the other thing I think people don't do is they don't take advantage of hashtags. If you're over on Instagram, oh my gosh, what they can bring you. It's amazing. The hashtags that people will follow just by tagging my dog as a menpin, which he is. I got like 50 people to start following me and Bandit and his exploits. So I would like to say dogs also rule. I also have a cat. She does awesome too. But finding out different ones to use in different situations helps a lot. So I totally love what you said.
And I think for me, the biggest mistake I see people make out there is they don't keep Wheaton's Law in mind. And
oh, yes.
Wheaton's Law is don't be a dick. So it is entirely possible to be very open and stand up for what you believe without being a jerk about it. You don't have to call names. You don't have to be contemptuous of people who don't agree with you. You can state your position and stand by it without being an awful person. So I think that's something to keep in mind, is you really don't want to burn those bridges. And yes, some people will leave just because you have stated your position. But many people, if that position is stated in a way that isn't combative, will say, okay, I don't agree with you at the end of the day, but we can still have a civil dialogue. And that makes you stand out, because there's not a whole lot of civil dialogue out there. So we're going to open it up to questions. One caveat I would ask is, please make sure your question is going to be reasonably useful to the rest of the audience and not so narrowly personal that it might be better as something to discuss after the panel with one of us individually. Yeah.
Wait. You got a microphone?
There's a...
Make sure that you have the microphone. This is being recorded.
We have somebody walking around to hand you.
Oh, it's a big box.
I love that mic.
Could each of you go through and talk about what you find personally to be your most effective posts as an author or creator? Are you tweeting out like little quotes? Are you doing teaser preview videos of your content? Are you doing some other kind of thing? Like, what do you personally get the most engagement and sales and responses to?
Well, pictures of my dog sleeping upside down on the air conditioning vent gets a lot of comments and shares. I'm not sure what it does for my book sales, but if you want engagement, boy, that's a good one. And you got to throw those in. Those are fun. John mentioned my supernatural obsession. I am on the 8 o'clock fan panel tonight. That truly came about because I love that fandom. And as anybody who does follow me will know, I post a lot about it. And that has brought me a large number of followers on Facebook, on Twitter, on Pinterest. But interestingly enough, since I write urban fantasy, if you like supernatural, you're probably going to like most of what I write on the urban fantasy and paranormal romance side of things. So there's a definite overlap there, although I didn't go into it for that. I have certainly seen that benefit. So that's probably consistently the best posts that I make are the ones that bring that audience in.
For me, it's not necessarily one type of thing, but more an aggregate mass of ranting, snark, and buy my crap posts. And I literally do way more please go buy my stuff posts than anyone will ever tell you to do. Everyone will tell you don't do this. I have program tweets going out every 2 hours to do them, and I see a drop in sales when I turn them off, because if junk mail didn't work, people would not still send junk mail. For me, it
so is, note his tweets are junk mail.
I told you I don't like Twitter. For me, it really is a it's a holistic approach. I spend time tracking my ads. I don't spend a whole lot of time analyzing engagement on individual posts. I run a Facebook group, and I'm much more active in that. My page, my professional author page, is a billboard. My Facebook group is interactive. So, Elvis?
Thank you very much. What I do is, of course, I mentioned earlier graphic novels, which is just a glamorized word for comic book. I will actually do a live feed on Facebook of a page that I'm working on. And I educate people what software I use, what type of tools, what type of techniques. And I'm sharing with other people, and that gets them to engage, and I'm helping them. And then somewhere in there, I'll just kind of mention something about my book. You do have to say something, but not go so much into it. And this is just me personally, where I'm like, oh, it's just advertising, that's it, which that can work. So I try to help them to be inspired to do their book too. And I found a lot of, you know, I'll get like 4,000 or 5,000, you know, hits just like that. And if they buy your book, that's a decent amount of money. So, but those work for me as a live feed, talking about what I do.
So and I'm openly going to admit, this is a do as I say, not as I do, which is probably pretty much a good theme for following me around.
Y'all don't have to agree that readily.
Bro, 24 hours ago, I signed your boob.
Wow, things you don't
want to
know.
That post got a lot of engagement on social media.
So, yes, if you follow me, you're pretty much going to see what's the latest stupid thing I decided to do. So a lot of engagement comes out of doing things differently. You know, like the latest stuff with my poor little puppy who just had to have surgery and recovering and all this kind of stuff. And it's, you know, that he's cute, he's adorable, and he's a whole lot sweeter than I ever will be. We might spend a little too much time together. But, I mean, doing fun things, doing unique things. One of the things that we started playing with, and I cut and we recorded a bunch of, is called Books and Beer. If you go on Facebook, you can see us doing live readings, usually sitting in a bar. having a couple of drinks, lightening up, and a lot of the time it's authors who've never read before. We're trying to find somewhere unique for them to play with. Right now they're on Facebook. They're going to be going up on the YouTube channel and on the website and other stuff. Find something unique and fun to do, and it doesn't have to bring you massive engagement. It needs to bring you the right engagement. And it's a long-term game. I mean, it's...
For me, it's being... When I post about my life and ups and downs and hardships I've had, that seems to work really well. But that fits with my brand. As a teacher, I tell stories, and that's how I've always explained concepts. So when I get on social media, part of what I love about it is social media is storytelling. So when I tell stories about what's going on, those tend to get the most heartfelt engagement, and that's also how I write. So they're getting contact with who I am, and I think a lot of people, when you follow somebody, whether they're a writer or an artist or an actor, you want to know something about who they are, even if it's that their dog, and I hope he's doing okay, good, because I was concerned suddenly, that you know something about their life. And so figure out what you're comfortable sharing. And figure out those boundaries early. For me, I don't call my husband by his name very often, but I refer to him as the hubby, because his life is more private than mine. He's a ghost on social media to a large extent, except for if you walked over on my world and knew who he was, he's not that much of a ghost. So you have to figure out how to handle that. But for me, that works. But that's kind of how I approach life also. So.
What days and times do you post on social media for the most views or the most highest effectiveness?
Who's your audience? That's going to be too target. Yeah. That's going to be too targeted a question, because it depends on who your audience is and what platform you're on.
Mm-hmm. And it, also the times they tell you to post the other times, because everybody says, like, you know, 11 to 1 or 7 to 8 or whatever. Post on those other times that nobody is as well. And you'll start to see when your audience is there. Just track it and play with it and see what works.
I would also say I found that Mondays work really good, because a lot of times on the weekends people are busy, they're doing stuff. If I post on a Monday sometimes, you know, like mid-afternoon, I think that, for me, that works out pretty good.
I pay absolutely no attention to any of that, and I post crap when I feel like it. And people... I mean, I've been posting during this panel. Some of you have been liking them, and you should be listening. Gail and these other people are smart. No, I do what I'm going to do when I'm going to do it, and if I spend the time trying to listen to what every single person tells me to do and every contradicting opinion on what I should do and how I should do it, I would never, ever write anything else, so...
How frequently do you post?
It depends on what's going on. But, you know, I'm going to weigh in on that and say, I'm not a morning person.
God.
So, but I can deal with going through my Facebook feed, going through my Twitter feed, going on Pinterest, doing some things like that. That I am comfortable doing first thing in the morning while the second and third and fourth and fifth cup of coffee are hitting the bloodstream. And then once I've gotten the social media done and gotten through my email, gotten some of the administrative stuff done, maybe scheduled some ads, that leaves my whole afternoon and evening, which for me are peak creative times, to write. So that's when I post for the most part, because it works for me and because it fits into my day. And if I had to do it at some other time and set alarms for it, it wouldn't get done, or my writing wouldn't get done, so it wouldn't get done.
Let me try to say something real quick. Also, with Facebook or Instagram, you want to make sure you post to groups. You know, once you know what your audience is, if it's zombies or robots, join as many groups of that, because one group could have 20,000 people in it. So don't forget that.
If they have rules against self-promotion. Don't self-promote. You would think that goes without saying.
Well, the way I do it is I don't advertise my book. I'll just post some art that I did. And if they like it, they see the icon. They click on the icon. Then eventually that goes to the Amazon store. You are right about that.
This is back to that long game thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that long game thing also, as far as groups go, if you're joining groups that you are legitimately interested in beyond just, hey, this looks like a good place to promote, and you are part of the conversation, and you are sincere in your interest, and you make valuable contributions so that people look forward to your posts, then people tend to follow you home in terms of, oh, let's see what else this person does.
Figuratively speaking.
Sounds like a plan.
And that's the long game, because you're not just there for the quick hit. You're there to build the relationship.
Right.
And the business comes out of the relationship.
Hi. I'm actually asking a question for a friend who's not here, and he's an academic who writes books on Lincoln. So they're nonfiction books. So this might be the base question for James. What is the good way to promote nonfiction and something like a academic topic like Lincoln?
So, and I do deal with clients and stuff for nonfiction. And again, so if you're doing something like that, that's going to probably appeal to an academic crowd, and it's going to appeal to an older crowd. So if it is an academic text, you've got to go to where the academics are. LinkedIn is a good platform for that. One of the other things that I do recommend, and again, this is back to doing the demographics, but if you're really looking at something like Lincoln or something very very niche like that, you have to go into very niche groups and engage. That's the sort of thing I would actually put on LinkedIn. I would go out there because that's where a lot of the academics are now are gathering.
And the groups. I absolutely agree with groups. Mm-hmm. Groups are one of the strongest things to get on news feeds on Facebook. They get a bump. So I would encourage him to get involved. And as Gail said, get involved with that community, engage with it, not try to sell. And then over time, that's where they will find him.
You establish yourself as an expert. That's really what you're trying to do.
Test. Okay, top five tips you can do to cut through the noise, platform specific or generic.
One apiece.
Stegans. Oh, okay.
Hashtags on Instagram. Know your hashtags and don't use, like, you can use the most popular ones, but find ones with smaller numbers following them because you're more likely to be seen.
I'm going to assume the majority of people in here are not necessarily tech savvy, so I'm going to give you a tool to look up to use to start educating yourself on how the hashtags work and how the demographics work. Look up a tool called ubersuggest.com and spend some time learning how demographics work, how keywords
spell
work.
That, Jim.
U-B-E-R, like I'm hopping on an Uber, suggest, S-U-G-G-E-S-T. I think I spelled that right. I've been talking way too much today.
Good.
All right. And it's a Neil Patel tool.
Oh, he's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
If you use two platforms, let's say Instagram and Facebook, and you go to post, I would post something different. I know some people try to cheat. They say, well, the people on Instagram, they're not going to say Facebook, they will. Usually people are on both. So that's kind of hard to do. It's aggravating to do because you need to have time to work on your book. But that's a part of it. And I think there's ways to allow yourself to have fun, because as fun it is being creative writing a story, you can also take that creativity towards marketing and say, how can I not advertise but advertise at the same time? And that's what I was talking on earlier. You can talk about what you do. You know, I don't have to rehash that. But definitely don't put the same thing on two different platforms. Be more creative. And it can be fun being creative by coming up with something, you know, a couple of times a day. So.
You don't have to self-censor crap. You can be as brash as you want, and you can be as rude and whatever as you want. Understand what you're getting into. I understand the brand I'm building is mildly amusing drunken redneck.
Very mildly.
Amusing enough to get you to lift your shirt up.
Yeah, well.
So.
I have to say, there's a lot of steam where I'm sitting, right in the middle.
Troy, I'm thinking we should. should have sat next
No, I've gotten shorter as time has gone on. Too much steam.
Yeah. Gail may write male paranormal romance. Gemini, live it. Not really, we barely like each other. But the point of all of that, the point of all of that shtick is that's our brand and the ability to understand who you're going to attract and what you're going to get out of what you're putting forward. If you are highly intelligent and dry and very by the book and this is how I do things and this is it, then don't go for shtick. If you're a silly bugger, then do what we do. You don't have to tailor your social media image to some sanitized, locked down framework. We're not all going to fit within the same frame. So, you be you, boo-boo.
I think the other opportunity people miss out on is not using their multiple platforms to amplify a message. So you write a really cool blog post. Did you post about that blog post with a teaser on Facebook to drive your Facebook people to go to find your blog? Did you tweet about it so that your Twitter following goes there? Did you, you know, that's where we lose out on some of the momentum we could fuel ourselves, because you're not going to have 100% duplication on all those platforms. So are you actively driving the audience from one platform to find something they want on another platform and follow you there? And that's a wonderful way to self-amplify. And we too often forget to do it. And it's really easy to do.
Earlier you mentioned being professional but not making a living from it. When then do you consider yourself a professional, by the amount of time you spend working on your craft?
Well, so just speaking for myself, I get paid for it. And I write, I don't do just fiction and nonfiction. I write articles. I actually did some of my earliest published stuff in media. So I've kind of crossed the gambit, but I mean, the easiest way to say it is, are you ready to treat it like a professional? Are you ready? You know, it's not even necessarily I've been paid. It's a matter of what is your attitude towards your work and what you're doing. I'm a smart ass, but I still take everything I do somewhat seriously.
That's very key. God, I'm agreeing with Nettles. This is y'all write this down. No,
please tweet this out, because it'll never happen again.
God, there's video. No, Jim makes a really, really good point and a really good distinction that I do want to drive home. He and I are very similar in this regard. Neither of us take ourselves very seriously at all, but we take our work incredibly seriously. And I 100% agree that it is the attitude with which you approach what you're doing that makes you a professional. In my former life in theater, I would do shows, and we would have equity actors come in to do shows on guest artist contracts, and community theater actors, and the equity actor is getting paid equity scale for that show, and the community theater actor is working for free. And the level of professionalism was never commensurate with the paycheck. It is always driven by attitude and behavior and how you treat the people around you. And that, to me, is exactly what makes a professional.
And a piece of that is, do you do what you say you're going to do? If other people are depending on you, can they rely on you? Are you going to just up and leave everything in the lurch because you felt like doing something else? Well, then it's a hobby. It's not a profession. So I think that ability to have people know that if you say you're going to do something, you're going to do it. is key.
And I think there's a trap to watch for called imposter syndrome, where you're doing the work, you're being there, you're doing everything, you are a professional, but you don't want to call yourself a professional because you don't feel like you should be able to do that. So if you fit the definition that these lovely people have said, you are. Don't fall into the imposter track. Accept what you are, stand up and be proud of it. I'm an author, and say that, and live it. But watch for imposter syndrome. It's a horrible thing.
Imposter syndrome is so ubiquitous. There's a great story that Neil Gaiman tells. Many of you are writers. You're at Dragon Con. Most of you, I assume, know who Neil Gaiman is.
Who?
I said most. Neil tells this story about being at an event and looking around at all of these celebrities and thinking, God, I don't belong here. This is after Stardust has been made. This is after he's had multiple best-selling novels and, well, Sandman. And he's looking around the room at all these people thinking, ah, wow, I'm so out of my depth. I don't belong here. These people are all so much better than me and deserving. And this older gentleman walks up and introduces himself and says, wow, you know, with all of you artists and really creative people here, I just don't feel like I belong. I'm feeling like I'm really out of place and like I don't deserve to be here. And the reason that this guy stood out in Gaiman's mind is that they shared a first name. And Gaiman looked at this guy and thought to himself, if the first man to set foot on the frickin' moon feels imposter syndrome, then I guess I'm okay. And it's probably just a thing that everybody feels. I know a very few creatives who have never felt imposter syndrome, but practically every single one that I've met has felt it to some degree, greater or lesser.
And the only thing I'll throw on top of that, I've actually written a number of articles on imposter syndrome. One I did a while back was about how you use imposter syndrome for positively, because you're going to have to deal with it and the tools you deal with it, but it can also help keep your ego in check. Sorry.
Don't look at me. I was responding to something on social media where they said I agreed with you.
By the way, that is the third seal of the apocalypse.
Probably last question here, because we are almost out of time.
That story always makes me cheer up. I'm a weaver, and obviously weaving is an ancient art. There's a million groups on Facebook for weaving, but if I want to make a reputation in a field that pretty much doesn't exist yet, with an industry as young as cosplay, of being somebody who can commission custom designed fabrics for cosplayers, like, where do I go? That group, it doesn't exist.
But there are so many cosplay groups, and there are materials for makers groups, and there are maker groups, and there are maker conventions, and there are crafter groups. All of those kinds of things. You gotta get, don't let yourself get so wedded to a term that if you can't search on that term and find a bunch of hits, you think it's not out there. Maybe it's going under another name, and maybe it's already out there and has a lot of representation. They're just using a different term for it.
And the only thing I'll throw on top of that is, if you're not finding what you're looking for, you're called a thought leader. You're starting that. And so one of the things we talked about, and I do want to throw in here, because of what you're talking about with materials and something visual and creative, is using Pinterest. Since we're on social media, Pinterest is the number three search engine. Google rewards Pinterest images if you do your tagging properly. It works exactly. It benefits the SEO. And as an author, there's a lot of ways to use Pinterest as well, but as doing that kind of creative work, in showing your process, showing how to do things, images.
Before
and after is an excellent way of doing a brand. Just like an author can use Pinterest to show the images and tag images they use for inspiration as well as their covers.
And house those images on your website and link them to Pinterest. So when somebody clicks on it, they go to your website to find out about that fabric.
And we are out of time, folks. Thank you so much for being such a wonderful audience.
I have bookmarks with free ebooks on them. Come get free stuff.